On today's episode, I'm talking with influencer marketing veteran Katie Stoller, a self-described type A, anxiety-driven control freak. After 10 years at the top global PR agencies in Chicago, Katie is now an independent marketing consultant. In our conversation, we talk about the birth of influencer marketing, the difference between growth marketing and brand building, and how different a corporate career is from running her own business. Listen in and learn why Katie emphasizes the value of time and says she wouldn't trade entrepreneurship for anything short of millions of dollars. Hi, Katie. Thanks for being with us for the M Word today.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk.
I am too. You're an influencer marketing expert, which we'll get into what that means and doesn't mean. You're an entrepreneur and you've worked in really big agencies and for really big clients. So just set the stage for our listeners. What are you doing now? Entrepreneurship is relatively recent in your journey. So share a little bit about your journey with us.
Yeah. So I was always like a culture obsessed kid. I became obsessed with being in PR, not even really knowing what that was because of Samantha from Sex and the City. Real like noble roots here. But I knew I wanted to like plan parties and like be out in the culture, and the communications field just like really like, you know, saying to me in terms of I always loved to read and write and I was not good at math and science. Like it just made sense. So that was kind of the path in college. And I ended up doing some really cool internships. I lived in LA for a couple years or for a year and worked kind of in that like whole world and decided I needed to really figure out like what this whole PR thing was about from like more of an educational perspective and not just the like foo-foo of what I thought it was. So I ended up going to grad school at DePaul in Chicago. And that's when I started kind of the agency track. From there, after I graduated, I was at Ogilvy for 5.5 years. Then I was at Ketchum for around 4 years. And then my last agency job was at Golin. And these are the agencies that represent like most of the portfolio companies in the world. So Walmart, Whirlpool, Kimberly-Clark, P&G, SC Johnson. These are the companies when you walk into a grocery store, they own everything. So really, really cool experience. And I always say that was kind of like boot camp of my career. It like really taught me everything I knew. And then kind of flash forward to pandemic times, everything was kind of crazy in the job market. I got like full on recruited out of my job, like never in a million years thought that would ever happen. But it was that weird market where like people were poaching all over the place and got recruited to this startup, Bay Area growth marketing consultancy. Didn't even really know too much about growth marketing. And I was there for a year and a half to stand up and run their influencer team. And I did that. It was really cool. I mean, I feel like in that year and a half, I learned more than anything in my entire life. Like it was just a very fast-paced environment, very different from kind of corporate.
Were you doing influencer work in the large agencies prior to that?
Yeah, sorry. I'm like not even talking about the influencer part of all this. But so I started in big agency in 2011, 2012. So people say it like didn't exist until 2015, 2016. I disagree because we were doing stuff, but it wasn't like a formalized thing. Like I used to call it IRM, like the real OGs know what that means. It's influencer relationship management. Like we had a whole different word for it. We were doing it, but it wasn't like a practice. Like there was a digital team and a social team. I sort of brought it into the brand marketing practice because I had friends that were bloggers and we weren't getting media hit for some of our clients. Are we, you know, we were in a slump. That's what happens in PR. You get into slumps with media relations. So I was like, can this blogger post about these garage organizer products? That was like one of the products we were working on. And when my client saw the 50 high-res images that we didn't have to pay for and a beautiful blog post write-up, that's when I was like, holy crap. Like, what is this? Like, this is PR on steroids. Like, what is this? And so I was one of those like original people who kind of like invented this industry. Like it wasn't a thing. It was happening a little bit on YouTube where like brands were like product placement, but it wasn't influencer marketing like the way it is now. Right. So that's kind of how it started back when I was at Ogilvy. And then as I moved up in my career and as years went on, it was like fast forward formalizing into this like actual industry.
So you went to a startup, you learned startup world, which is as you said, very different than corporate, probably different levels of budget around. It's probably do as much as you can with nothing, right?
Totally. And being in the growth space, our job as growth marketers was to like catapult these companies that had very little budget. No one knew who they were. It was like some random person in an incubator started this company. And they were like, can we use influencer to get 60,000 new followers in 2 days? And I was like, no, you can't. Like, that's just not how this works. But it was a different world because in the PR space, everything's brand awareness. It's brand lift. It's share of voice. It's how did the comments make people feel? Like it's so right. much more of this like feeling marketing, which is still important. Like people argue that like, you know, brand marketing's dead. Like, you know, it's all vanity metrics, but like there's still a benefit. That's what I always call the long game because it's affecting feelings over time to cause shift in how people, you know, purchase or whatever. But growth marketing is not the long game. Growth marketing is like in 24 hours, what can you do for me?
Right.
So it was very weird coming from 10 years of more of the like elusive, what does this mean marketing to we need to see results tomorrow.
Yeah. It just in terms of scale, like I'd be curious, like for those startup clients, those who are like, how do you grow our brand overnight? Like, were they sinking like tens of thousands of dollars into their marketing strategy? Or were they like, you know, just in terms of scale, or were they like, oh, we have a $10,000 budget for the year. What can you do for us? Like, where'd they fall?
A lot of these companies had like decent amounts of funding. Like, I think they were like Series A, B, like they had millions of dollars to play with. And they weren't like big companies, but they were like app. A lot of them were like apps or like banking type, with a lot of in the fintech space. Yeah. So they had money. I mean, it wasn't like here's $1,000, make us famous. Like the expectations were somewhat decent. And again, I'm not a growth marketer. So I don't have affiliate background. I don't have performance marketing background. I don't do a lot with paid on social. Like I set it up, but I don't execute those programs. So like, I don't know the magic sauce. And the company I worked for was amazing. I mean, they were like magicians. They were great at what they did. But from an influencer perspective, which was the team that I was leading, that's just not how influencer works. Like, that's just not the way it works.
Break it down for, because I, you know, we've worked with a lot of client facing or consumer facing brands. And everyone's like, do you do influencer marketing? I mean, nowadays, from my perspective, I feel like yes, you have to, even if it's on the organic side and it develops slowly versus like a really thoughtful strategic approach where you identify the influencers who are most aligned with your brand. Like you're going to have people both positively and negatively influencing your brand. So the more you can take the reins on that in the front end, the better. And I will say, you talk about sort of how it all started. I remember early in my marketing, consumer marketing trajectory, like in the early O's, you know, 07, 08, you know, we talked about building brand ambassadors mm-hmm. as you know, our starting point, like who already loves what we are doing and how do we activate them to do more for us? And it was less about compensation. The incentives were much more, affinity building, if you will. But it was that idea of like, people are out there building. This is very early in the blog, you know, blogging. This is when Twitter was just start, you know, really getting a foothold. And how can we get people who are already our users to talk about us? But for now, you know, here we are, 2024. Like when a client says, "I want influencer marketing," what do you hear, and how do you align what that really means in an execution way?
I mean, it like so much of what you said is like, yes, because in PR, everything is about ambassadors because like you're doing public relations. So you're connecting with the public to get attitudes changed and to get feelings evoked. So we've all in the PR world, we've always been like finding our little crew that's already, you know, hosting seminars. It might not be online. It might be like they're hosting seminars or whatever. And we're giving them, you know, special newsletters or we're telling them insider information. So there's always been this like exclusive like connection for people that are like true brand fans. And that was sort of the foundation of like what became influencer. Influence marketing as we know it today. I think with social media just exploding and the access to social media and the more users social media got and the like way it's literally glued to our phones now, like, I mean, all these things happened over years where it just became such an immersive part of our everyday. That's changed what this industry is, because I'm trying to like formulate this in a cohesive way, because now it's table stakes to be connecting with your audience. Like, there isn't an option. Every single brand should be like engaging in some way with their audience. It might not be spending $10,000 a month on influencers. That's not the only way to do it. But is it gifting? Is it doing an ambassador program? Is it sending coupon codes to a small group of people? Like, to me, all that sort of plays together. It's you know, there's not like a clear definition of what influencer marketing, where it starts and where it stops. Mm-hmm. But the brands that are like, oh, you know, we're not investing in influencer marketing, I honestly don't think there's that many brands that feel that way anymore. Like, we've sort of converted everyone to believing that this is a viable stream that they should be like at least approaching and learning about. But it's table stakes. I mean, everyone's doing it. Small law firms are like hiring influencers, like, you know, doctor's offices, like it's branching off into more the B2B space, and small mom and pop brands are sending free product to influencers. So it's kind of unavoidable at this point. I guess basically how I would summarize this whole stream of consciousness is that if you're on social media, you should be thinking through how you're going to connect with the people that are following your page. Like, that's kind of the basis of it.
Right. So you were with the startup, working with, it sounds like a lot of, you know, tech entrepreneurs and fintech. But now you're on your own. Is that right?
Yeah. So they decided, if I didn't allude to it enough, they decided that this like stream, this P&L didn't really make sense for growth. Like, it kind of never did. I ended up sort of being like a production house. I would find the influencers, I would produce the content, and then it would go straight to the performance team to boost. And that worked. I think they still probably do some of that, but it's just not the level of growth that like a growth consultancy wanted to focus their time on. So they sort of eliminated the department. This was beginning of 2023 when all these layoffs were happening. So they kind of were like, we love you. Like, you're great. Let's stay in touch. I still have a great relationship with that whole team, but they're like, we just can't like offer this as an offering anymore. The money needs to go to these like faster growth channels, which I totally agreed with. So I left 2023. Everyone's complaining. Like, I think Salesforce had just gone through like 70,000 layoffs. Like, it was like this wave. And I was like, yeah, crap. Like, I just got laid off, let go, whatever, from a small company. I don't really want to go back to the PR world. Like, that was an option. But I was like in this kind of like, eh. And I will say, throughout the last previous 3-4 years prior to 2023, beginning of 2023, I had already sort of been like wheels turning. I like had a website. I had an idea for a book. Like, I was not the traditional agency person that was like, I'm going to be an intern, and then in 10 years, I'm going to be a VP. And then in 10 years, I'm going to run this office. Like, that was never my path. I did not feel that in my bones. I always had the entrepreneurial spirit. Like, I just, since I graduated, since probably even before I graduated college. So it wasn't as much of like a jumping off the deep end moment. And it really wasn't that scary. It was kind of like, this is my moment. It was really exciting. I'm lucky. I'm married. I have a husband who has a job. So it wasn't like, how am I going to feed myself? It was like, it's going to be rough for a couple months, but we're going to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm just going to do this myself. I don't need a company. I know what I know now. I've been doing it since the beginning of this industry's existence. I really don't necessarily, in order to do good work, need a company behind me. And it's proved pretty accurate.
So no regrets jumping into or walking into, it sounds like, your sort of, you know, inevitable path of entrepreneurship. And it's been a year or two. How long now? A couple of years?
February 2023. So we're like just over the year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a fun milestone.
Yes.
So now that you're on the side of, you know, having to run the business, do the sales, deliver what you're delivering, you know, on the marketing strategy side or influencer strategy side, you know, what do you do for marketing? How do you market yourself?
It's so funny because there's a lot of like things about my personality and just how I am that like I'm not necessarily great at. Like I'm sort of like, there's a lot of things I'm sort of average at. That, you know, I was always kind of like an average student, B, some A student. Like I don't see myself as so good at this thing or so good at this thing. And I think that's probably worked to my benefit that I'm sort of like generalist level in a lot of things in my life. I'm kind of good at everything in small amounts, but one thing I've learned about myself over this last year and a few months is I'm really good at marketing myself. Like, I don't know why or how. I think a lot of it comes from my PR background. I just sort of had been doing it for brands for so long that it just was innate when I started doing it. But everyone's like, isn't it hard to like email companies? And isn't it hard to post on LinkedIn? And isn't it hard to do panels and pitch yourself for podcasts? And I'm like, no. Like, I've had no... It's been fun. It's been easy. Opportunities have been like pretty like available to me. I have an amazing network. I've curated this network. I've focused on my network. And I think that's also worked really well to my advantage. But I enjoy so much of the like selling myself.
Do you think it's because I love this industry? It's authentic. But it's authentic, right? Because I think as marketers, we all have had, I mean, clients are fantastic, but like there comes a point where it's like, if I have to come up with one more creative way to pitch a pen, like,
right,
you know, like there's, you're outside of yourself when you're selling other people or other products or other ideas, and they can be very meaningful to you or they can be really disconnected from you. But when you're selling yourself, like there's no more honest thing in your own life, is there?
Right. Yes, totally. Yeah. And I think I've struggled with confidence like we all have, but I feel like once I got into my 30s and had my kids, like a lot of the like fear and like imposter syndrome sort of just, I was just like, I don't care anymore. Like, I'm not going to let that, maybe I will be an idiot and sound like an idiot. Cool. Like I just sort of like stopped caring. And when that like veil of like fear kind of goes away, like this stuff is easy and it's fun. And I'm in this era now of like, I'm just going to do things that feel good. And that is what ends up paying you back. Like, I truly feel like the universe rewards us for doing things that feel good, you know?
I love what you just said when the veil of fear is gone. And I had another guest recently who talked about when you're not afraid, like there's no limits, right? Like this idea of, was that, you know, was it an intentional or sort of like a turning point in your own, like saying to yourself, like, Katie, like, there's nothing to be afraid of, go for it. Or was it just, it wasn't there anymore. It kind of went away and you just forged ahead.
I've said this before and I always like kind of like bite myself for saying it, but I'm going to say it again because I actually like still work with a lot of agencies, but I think the agency, and this is not to knock on any of the agencies I've worked at, but I think the agency environment does not breed confidence. I'll just put it that way. It's meant to sort of like keep you in your level, keep you doing your work. Like you'll get promoted on this track and you have to like check all these boxes. And, you know, every once in a while they'll do like a pizza party for a high performer. And, you know, it's the same six people that get these awards every, you know, it's like, it's not, it doesn't like reward creative thinking in a way that like it should, you or that you'd think it does. And I think just in corporate America in general, they want little soldiers. Like that, like it's to their benefit to have these like little soldiers that do their job and
producers.
And I just like, I was good at that. I did it for time. And I clearly was good enough to do it for a long time. But I think it was when I kind of like broke that. And I think the startup environment helped me do that because it's set up very differently. And then also, I think also being a pioneer, whatever you want to call it, of an industry is really, really unique. Like no doctor out there these days is going to say that they're the pioneer of like pediatrics. Like, I mean, there's a lot of mainstream industries. No one's like, I'm the first librarian or I'm the first teacher. Like to be able to say I'm literally one of the first people that was doing influencer marketing, I think that also gave me this like level of confidence that like just my age and when I started, those two credentials alone stand me out of a crowd that's filled with like 22-year-olds that say that they know what they're doing. So just being able to be like, I've been doing this since, you know, 2009 is when I like started in the industry. That helped me like sort of be like, the facts are the facts, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it was those two things. I was like breaking out of kind of like the constructs of corporate America and agency life. And then also just being in this industry that's like so ever evolving, but being there from the beginning. So I never feel like I missed something. Like I'm like, I've been there through it all.
So what part of this has been hard? Cause it, you know, or where have the bumps been?
When I was thinking about like, I don't know. I can't think of like this particular event that was hard because so much of life is hard. But I think for me, this is kind of like a silly answer, but it's just like the adulting of it all and making decisions for myself. I'm really, really bad at making decisions. I feel like as I've become older, the smaller decisions are impossible. My husband thinks I'm like insane because it'll take me 3 hours to decide if I should go to the grocery store or not. He's like, just go or just don't. Like, it's not that deep. And I think in my 20s, in the beginning of my career, it was like the bigger decisions were hard. Like I stayed at Ogilvy for 5.5 years, which back then was sort of normal. But like now I'm like, what? Like, why? You know, I mean, the clients weren't changing very much. My roles weren't changing very much. I had trouble kind of like committing because I'm such a like anxiety prone person that I'm like every single decision is a ripple effect for the future. Mm. So I would just get like paralyzed by decisions. Right. And I feel like now I'm fine with the bigger decisions. You know, what school to send my kids to? Are we going to go on vacation this year? Like I'm okay with those, but now I'm like, it's the minutia that I get stuck with, which I'm not sure why. I think
it's decision fatigue though. And yes. I think, I mean, I completely relate to what you're saying about, you know, sort of not wanting to make the wrong decision when like earlier in your, like, as you're kind of growing up professionally, the decisions feel like jumping off a cliff. Like yes. there's, you can't come back from this if it's the wrong decision, which I think time, and also I think having children, like it's a reset into like, we can keep people alive. Like we're doing okay. But it's also this perspective of, if that isn't working out, we'll just do the next thing. Or like, I think that comes with experience. But I think that, you could be speaking for me with the minutia of the decision. Should I right now, should I work on, I need to reconcile my bank account, or should I respond to those 3 emails that have been bugging me? I don't know. I don't know which one I should do. And I'm going to flip back and forth between them. I've worked with business coaches who it's like, you know, this is not a process issue. This is like overwhelmed with the minutia. And so then it all becomes like, it's easier for me to sit down and make a really big strategic decision about my business than it is for me to, how should I spend the next hour of my day?
That makes sense. And I feel like there's like this whole like trend right now about like people self-diagnosing themselves with ADHD. And I used to be like, I'm the opposite of someone that's like ADD because I'm very good at focusing and I like sitting with a task. And now I'm like, do I have ADHD? Because I'm like hopping. I have 2 laptops up because I have 1 for one of the big agencies I work for, 1 for my business. And I'm like, if someone saw me, they'd be like, is this person like on drugs? Because I'm jumping around all day. And I'm like, I'm gonna have ADHD because I mean, it's just not the nature of my work to be able to focus too long. So not to this is a mom issue, but like, I'm also thinking all day about like what are my kids eating for lunch? Like, are they going to come home and be cranky? Like, it's like, there's just a constant feedback loop in my head of questions and concerns and things I have to think about that. It's like, how are we not all ADHD in some way? Like, it's weird if you're not, you know?
Exactly. So as you think ahead, for your business and your professional life, what matters to you personally and professionally? And you know, what will success mean for you? Do you feel successful, or do you have are you working towards success?
For me, what I've learned is it all comes down to time. Like, it's the only resource we all have that we don't have enough of. And as a type A anxiety-ridden control freak, that can go in my bio. I value like the freedom of my time and the control of my time. And I think the reason I didn't like thrive necessarily. I mean, I did great and it was fine for those 10 years at agency life. But I think the reason personally I didn't thrive, like I never felt good. I never felt totally happy and totally fulfilled was because I didn't own my time. Like I had to be in an office from 9 or 8 to 6, whatever. I had client calls blocked out all week. I had internal check-ins. I had my quarterly review with my boss. Like it was, you don't own that. That is something that someone tells you. And that if you don't get your paycheck, if you don't do those things, you know, it's like, it's so structured. And I, since I've gone off on my own, my time is my own. And like, if I want to work more and be a little bit more stressed out, I'll make a little bit more money. If I don't, I'll make a little bit less money. And I've like learned kind of like my ranges of what I'm comfortable with. And I'm not someone that like, I want to be successful. I would love to, you know, be a bazillionaire and make a ton of money. Like obviously who wouldn't, but I am also comfortable with like making enough money that keeps me comfortable and then going to the gym at 10 o'clock every day, like I do now, and not having to tell people where I am or going to a doctor's appointment and not needing to send 75 calendar invites out because I'm going to the doctor for 30 minutes. Like, and I said this too, to someone recently too, that like, it would need to be like probably millions of dollars to get me to go back totally to that life. I think a lot of full-time jobs now are allowing more freedom. And if I could find, if I found a perfect full-time job and it was good money and there was that level of flexibility, I'd consider it. But if I was going back to like the rigid in-office 5 days a week, 9 to 5, check-in, like the, I truly think it would need to be like millions of dollars to do that. Cause I don't think I could go back after seeing the other side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I think I could talk to you for an hour, but to bring this to people's attention spans, they won't listen for an hour, unfortunately. So you started off talking about being culturally obsessed at the beginning of your career, which I wrote that down because that's such a great phrase. So I'm obsessed with Barbie, the movie. Do you have thoughts, Barbie or Ken?
I was going to go off onto like a tangent about the movie. I literally cried through that entire movie. I left it being like, that was like really complicated. And I don't know it needed to be so complicated, like the story, but I cried through the whole thing. I just thought I'm just so happy that that conversation was like brought to the world, because we talk about, you know, there's been Me Too and there's been all these things about women's like rights, and now the women's rights are all gone essentially in the last couple of years, but it's been such a topic of conversation. But just watching it on screen and watching like the plight was just so moving to me. Like I saw it again and cried again. So I'm like Barbie all the way. I mean, I think Greta did such a great job of the Ken role, and I love how it's been so embraced. And it was, they just did the huge thing with the Oscars. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I loved it. My daughter's 3 years old, so obviously she can't see it yet, but I can't wait to show it to her. And I hope this like feeling of like Taylor Swift Eras Tour, Beyonce, like I hope this like keeps going, even with all the ridiculousness happening in the government, because I don't know. I feel like we needed it. It was like a collective, like deep breath for the women of America. That was a really long answer. I'm sorry.
No, and this could be a whole other conversation. In fact, we on the M Word, For anyone who's still listening to this conversation, we screened the Barbie movie with a group of local leaders who live near me, women, and recorded a podcast, 2 episodes about our discussion of how that movie impacted this group of women. It was really powerful stuff. So I could talk about the movie all day long as well, and Taylor Swift. Thank you for sharing your perspectives, Katie. It's been so much fun talking. And for those who want to learn more about what you do and influencer marketing, where can they find you?
So I am most active. I'm on pretty much all day LinkedIn. I know, nerd alert, but it's becoming the new thing, everyone. Get on board. So LinkedIn is probably the best. Just Katie Stoller. You can find me. Hello at katiesolar.com is my email if anyone wants to connect over email. And then I have a separate sort of company for my consulting business called Influencer Insider Guide. It's just influencerinsiderguide.com. And you can purchase an ebook all about influencer marketing 101. I have some free downloadables on there as well. If you just kind of want to check out more about the industry and learn more about me.
Awesome. Well, and we'll put those links in the show notes as well. So thanks again for being here and sharing your journey and a little bit more about influencer marketing and entrepreneurship. So thank you, Katie.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to The M Word. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Subscribe and never miss a podcast. Visit arlingtonstrategy.com for more. The M Word is an Arlington Strategy production hosted by Jennifer Mulchandani. Our theme music is by Mucci. Graphic design by Kayla Fagan and Emily Rare. Sound engineering and editing by Winston Turner.